Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Moving to the second half of our show, and here's where we get to follow the money. We were tracking the hackers on the first part of the show, and now we're going to be following the money. And there's so much going on. I'm confused. Don't know where to begin. But my guests here, Steve Losey and Sean Riley from the Federal Times, have been taking a look at all this stuff. Folks, how are you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Very good. Very good. I know they say you guys are senior writers. Does that mean you're the oldest people in the building?
Maybe. We'll see.
Okay. We'll find out. We'll age you some today. Don't know where to start. How about first, what's the deal on the federal 2013 federal pay raise, if any?
Well, there's some weird things going on with the federal pay raise, things that I've never seen happen before in all my years. The way it usually works when Congress is granting a pay raise is the president proposes a pay raise. Congress weighs in on what they think the pay raise should be, usually as part of the financial services and general government spending bill, and what Congress says goes. Now, this year we're supposed to be coming off a two-year pay raise, and one would expect that the financial services bill would contain what the federal pay raise is going to be next year, or at worst, specifically freeze the pay next year. Neither of those is happening. What's happening is Congress is staying entirely silent on the pay raise or pay freeze in this financial services bill, which is unusual to say the least. What a Senate staffer who is familiar with the political strategy has told me is the Democrats in the Senate are hoping that they can squeak through this budget passing season with no spending bill saying raise pay, freeze pay, because if Congress doesn't weigh in, that leaves it up to President Obama to choose what the pay raise should be. He proposes a pay raise each year in an executive order, and unless Congress weighs in and overrides that, that becomes law. It's a very risky, it's a very high, kind of a high wire strategy, and it depends exclusively on the Republicans not being able to squeeze a pay freeze in any one of the numerous spending bills working their way through Congress.
I guess it's one of these things they probably, backers of the pay raise, wish we wouldn't even talk about it.
Kind of, yeah.
Just let it happen.
Yeah.
You make a good point. This is a 16-year precedent in all of this. When the Federal Pay Reform Act kicked off, President Bill Clinton was the first one who had anything to do with it, and he recommended a zero pay raise. Congress overrode him. With the help of Representative Steny Hoyer of Maryland, who's still there. And every year thereafter, including through the 8 years of the Bush administration, the president would propose less, and the Congress would usually override him and put in a higher amount. So you're exactly right. This is unprecedented, this technique.
Yeah, usually the only – excepting in years, the last 2 years of the pay freeze, usually the only debate in Congress is how big of a pay raise to give federal employees and whether feds should get the same raise as military service members, which is known in Washington as pay parity. So this whole thing about we're going to not address pay at all and leave it up to the president is something that I've never really seen.
Is there a military pay raise figure out there?
There is, and I am blanking on that right
welcome,
now.
Yeah, no, welcome that. To the club. But the president did propose 0.5%.
So. That's right. For federal employees, President Obama wants a half percentage point pay raise, which would be the smallest in the general schedule's history, excepting years when pay has been frozen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, even the best case scenario for federal employees isn't very reassuring.
Is the idea of a third year pay freeze for 2013, is that still out there? Is it still have some steam?
There are still a lot of Republicans, most especially in the House, who think federal pay should be frozen at least one more year. Some people have proposed a five-year pay freeze. You know, that would be extending it, the current two-year freeze, three more years. So, yeah, the notion of a third-year federal pay freeze is definitely still alive and kicking.
And this strategy, too, of of not saying anything, the Democrats not saying anything and hoping it will sort of happen by default. This also takes them off the political hook before the election, because an opponent can't say Senator Claghorn wants to give the bureaucrats in Washington more money.
That is true. You know, I can't say whether that's definitively, I can't say whether that's part of their motivation, but that is definitely a fact. And I would not be surprised if some lawmakers were kind of looking to pass the buck on that front for exactly those reasons you stated.
Yeah, well, I think in an election year, in any election year, this is part of the issue. And I think in a presidential year, when more people turn out and vote, that always scares the politicians. And something like this would fit the bill. The Democrats could say, we love you, but we didn't want to rock the boat, and whether they get the raise or not.
Yeah, that's right. Definitely.
Well, okay, what about, and I've looked at the front page of your paper, you guys are working on a lot of things. The Internal Revenue Service is talking about it's going to have problems if the staff keeps shrinking.
That's right. For the last several years, we've been seeing the overall federal workforce increase. And in 2011, it did something. There was a slight decline, about 11,000 or so employee decline, which is not very big. It's about half a percentage point decline in the federal workforce. And their most agencies saw at least slight increases in their staffing in 2011. But there are a couple, IRS is one of them, that saw some notable declines. We're talking 6%, 7%, in some cases 10% declines in their workforce. And you can't just cut 7%. You can't. The IRS, for example, they lost about 7,000 employees, not quite 7,000 employees. You can't just cut those numbers of people and expect everything to be okay. I spoke to the National Treasury Employees Union that said that it's cutting those nearly 7,000 people have hurt the IRS's ability to help taxpayers, especially elderly taxpayers, get their tax returns in, figure out what they owe the government. There was, there's been talk about shortened hours at the assistance centers, there and longer lines. They're cutting off people who want to come in. At a certain point, they're saying, we can't hand out any more numbers, we can't take any more people, and come back tomorrow, basically. It's also hurting the IRS because there are fewer people who are actually collecting revenues. The IRS itself has said this costs nearly $4 billion a year in revenue. And when we're facing such a massive, massive deficit, and this is just money that's being left on the table if we don't give the IRS enough money to hire the people who are supposed to collect the revenues that the federal government is owed. So it's kind of counterproductive.
Well, there are members of Congress who don't like taxes, don't like the IRS, and I wondered if any of them are behind these cuts, and this is just a way to reduce the IRS and its effectiveness.
It's possible. You know, I can't really say one way or another whether there's, you know,
A plot,
nefariousness,
yeah,
involved. But while I can't speak to the motives, the effect is definitely clear. The IRS is leaving roughly $4 billion on the table because it's not funding these people. Another agency that is being hit is the Social Security Administration.
Oh, I wanted to ask you about that and the National Weather Service. We need to take a short break here. We'll be right back. Thanks.
My journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
This week's Experts in Health topic is women's cardiovascular health, featuring Dr. Carol Cardinale, Chief of Cardiology with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, which practices in D.C. and suburban Maryland.
True or false? Heart disease kills more men than women. Actually, that is a widespread misconception. Hi, I'm Dr. Cardinale. Heart disease is the leading cause of death in women, just as it is in men. Heart disease leads to the death of more women than breast cancer does. At greater risk for heart disease are smokers, women who are depressed, and postmenopausal women. Additional risk factors include a family history of premature heart disease, lack of physical activity, high-fat diet, diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. Speak with your physician about screening options. At Kaiser Permanente, we actively screen every member for changes in their cardiovascular health at every appointment.
Dr. Cardinale was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org Mid-Atlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Recently, United Healthcare was selected to serve the families in the TRICARE West region, and we want those who we will serve to know more about us. United Healthcare is part of a company of over 115,000 people, serving over 75 million Americans nationwide. Our people work hard to be a trusted healthcare partner for all of our members, and we're proud of our track record of quality service. The American Medical Association ranks us number one in claims processing accuracy among the seven leading commercial health insurers for 2011. J.D. Power & Associates names us number one in its employer satisfaction survey. And Fortune Magazine has named us its most admired health insurer 2 years in a row. As provider for the members of TRICARE West, our people will work every day to put our unmatched provider network, industry-leading innovations, and passion for service to work for you. We are United Healthcare. And for us, the chance to help military families isn't just a job. It's an honor. United Healthcare.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Data center consolidation requires fresh thinking. Hi, I'm Amy Rock with the federal sector of VCE. VCE V-Block systems seamlessly integrate leading compute, network, and storage technologies to uniquely support highly virtualized mixed workload environments. This improves your data center utilization and adaptability while dramatically lowering your costs.
VCE V-Block systems are the next evolution of IT. To learn more, visit vce.com/federal. That's vce.com/federal.
Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Steve Losey and Sean Ronnie, senior writers for the Federal Times. And, Sean, I interrupted you, but you were talking about some cutbacks at Social Security, what that means to people there and to people who are on Social Security.
Yeah, I mean, Social Security itself has faced a more than 5,000 person, or excuse me, nearly 4,500 employee decline, excuse me, last year, which is for itself another 6% decline. And that hurts the people out there in the country who depend on Social Security checks and Social Security to help them make ends meet. When they the Social Security Administration has been relying on overtime and having their employees stay late to interview citizens, but their budget keeps getting cut, and they lost the ability to pay for that overtime. So what they've started doing is closing field offices to the public a half hour early each day to make sure that the remaining employees can finish up the interviews without relying on overtime.
Well, that's interesting because you say IRS lost about 7,000 people. Social Security's lost about 4,500, two of the largest agencies. Is this because of budget cuts? Is it people retiring and not replacing them?
A bit of both. I mean, agencies have been having their budgets cut or are frozen, and as a result, one of the ways that they try to keep themselves under that budget cap is by reducing their workforce costs. When people retire, they don't refill many of those positions. Justice Department has been doing that, for example. Sometimes they offer buyouts. The IRS offered buyouts last year. So yeah, it's a combination of many things that is resulting in lower workforces at several key agencies, and translates to worsening services being provided to the public.
Well, there was a quote that came out of the Vietnam War, and I'm not sure that it's true. I'm not sure that anybody ever said it, but it became sort of part of the lore, and that was, we had to destroy the village to save it. And sometimes you look at these federal agencies and you look at them being systematically cut back, particularly in areas that touch the public, taxpayer assistance, Social Security itself, which is the third rail of American politics. And then after the hue and cry gets loud enough, somebody says, why don't we contract out these jobs?
Yeah. And, you know, there could be kind of a, the problem could just keep growing. If we start cutting staffing levels and that hurts the mission, it cuts the public support for, you know, certain agencies. People could say, well, gosh, if these guys in Social Security aren't getting the job done, why are we paying them? And results in reduced support for their budget, which means Congress cuts their budget further, which then results in fewer employees, who then do an even worse job, and the spiral continues.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you could, if you were so inclined, you could think there was a plot going on. Sean, you haven't earned your keep today. What are you working on?
Well, getting ready on the National Weather Service, getting ready for a hearing tomorrow that House Appropriations Subcommittee that oversees and, you know, basically drafts the spending bill for the Commerce Department, which includes the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which includes the Weather Service, is holding on these allegations of financial mismanagement by Weather Service managers in fiscal 2010 and 2011. As you recall, last month, head of NOAA and then the Deputy Secretary for Commerce released a couple of memos essentially outlining the findings of that investigation, which concluded that managers had improperly moved millions of dollars, it's not clear exactly how much, from different accounts without getting congressional approval, what's called reprogramming approval. And so what's now happened is that the Weather Service, or NOAA, has asked, or I guess I should say Commerce Department, has asked Congress to reprogram about $36 million in Weather Service funding for this year. But members are so upset about what happened in the past without their knowledge that they're holding up that request. And as a result, the Weather Service is saying if the money isn't reprogrammed fairly soon, I mean, they're a little bit vague on this, that they may have to furlough some folks.
Well, the idea, this reminds me of the fabled Washington Monument cut, where, you know, you cut the Interior Department's budget and they closed down the Washington Monument to tourists at the height of season. In this case, you got the National Weather Service with an October 1 deadline for the new fiscal year, maybe having to furlough people during peak hurricane season?
Yeah, and you're right. There's always a question about how seriously to take that, and I should say that I think the chances are pretty good, if not, you know, 100%, that this will get worked out, that no one's going to be furloughed. But it certainly got people's attention. And I was thinking when you and Steve were talking about the Social Security Administration, IRS, I mean, I think none of us can remember too many federal agencies that claim their budgets are adequate.
Right.
But in some cases, they're not always crying wolf. And I've spoken to some Weather Service folks, employees, who say that, you know, essentially the agency faces what they call a structural deficit, as, you know, most of its expenses are in personnel. Labor costs, they have more than 100 local forecast offices around the country, and that their budgets, although it has been increasing, hasn't been increasing enough to keep up with personnel expenses.
Well, it's interesting, the place like the IRS, and I know the NTEU president Colleen Kelly has some good numbers about this, but about how for every dollar the IRS spends in any way, shape, or form, but including for salaries, that they bring back, I don't know whether it's 8 or 10 or 12, and even there are some people who criticize that, but even if it's wildly exaggerated, it's a money-making operation. It's one of the few things in the federal government that brings in money.
Sure, absolutely. And you know, the Obama administration claims it could be bringing in a lot more money if they had more, you know, essentially more enforcement agents. You know, there's this what they call the tax gap, which is the difference between the amount of taxes owed and the amount of taxes paid. And I don't have the exact figure on the tip of my tongue, but it is billions and billions and billions of dollars, you know, that essentially is not going collected. And presumably, if you had more folks on the, you know, in the agency charged with tax enforcement, they could bring in more revenue.
I think a lot of federal workers were outraged to see that the Congress was working on a plan that would increase the amount of money they contribute to their retirement plan, increasing it rather dramatically as a way to avoid increasing the interest on student loan rates.
Yeah, I think that's a classic illustration of sort of the dilemma we're in at this point, where there's very little chance, or it's extremely difficult to get any kind of tax increase, or to use the preferred euphemism, revenue enhancement, through Congress. So you have these competing priorities where it is a zero-sum game. You do have to take from Peter to pay Paul, and you can certainly see where federal employees would be upset about that.
Well, a lot of these things that we were worried about earlier this year and even in the last year, things like the high five, switching from the high three to the high five, is that anywhere on the radar screen now?
Not right now. Not right now. We haven't heard anything in the last couple of months that seriously goes into something like the high five. There's been talk about something like a 5% increase in the amount that federal employees contribute to their retirement plans, but that's kind of been put on the back burner for now. It seems like Congress is very concerned with at least trying to get some of these budget things passed for the time being.
Do you think that federal workers are suffering an identity crisis in that? That many Americans, the government means the government, and it may be the citizens of San Jose or San Diego, and they're worried about the unfunded liability of the pensions, but that they somehow confuse the state and local government workers with federal employees, that could hurt the feds?
I think you've got a point there. I think federal employees do, on some level, have a bit of an identity crisis. The morale is starting to get hit. The surveys from last year showed federal employees are feeling less satisfied with their pay. Their first rumblings of dissatisfaction were starting last year. I would expect that when this year's employee viewpoint survey is done, we're going to see more of that dissatisfaction surface. I think if you think back for 10 years. Think back 10 years in the immediate post 9/11 environment, there was a groundswell of support for federal employees. Federal employees were the ones who helped save people at the Pentagon and at the World Trade Center, and they were the ones who were helping to try to fight terrorism. And I mean, even the postal workers who were delivering mail during the anthrax crisis there was a groundswell of support for them. Flash forward to 2012, we're in the midst of a deficit crisis. There are a lot of politicians who were explicitly blaming federal employees and their pay for contributing to that problem. There's and federal employees have kind of gotten through this recession without the same kind of mass layoffs that we've seen in the private sector and in the state and local governments, not to say that they haven't been touched by the recession, but they haven't been laid off in nearly the numbers that other areas have. And there's kind of a bit of resentment towards feds from some people across the country.
Yeah, I sense it. You hear it in talk shows and even in learned talking head shows on Sunday. I'll be right back here talking to Sean Riley and Steve Losey.
What does it take to go from good government to great? When one agency decided to modernize an old financial system, several departments struggled to transition effectively. But one office resolved $718 million worth of systematic financial errors to quickly become an agency-wide model for new system adoption.
Visit myacuity.com/realresults to learn more. Acuity, your vision, our focus. These days, federal agencies are exploring how to be more efficient, from cutting hidden costs to operating differently. Turn to Deloitte. We blend public sector experience and private sector insights to help defense and civilian agencies rethink, reduce, and restructure, all while strengthening your mission, so you can stretch budgets more and your staff less. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. We help government help America.
Here's Dr. Madhu Agarwal, Deputy Undersecretary for Health for Policy and Service for the Veterans Health Administration, on the Gateway to Veterans Health and Wellness panel.
We take care of a lot of veterans with many chronic conditions. Those veterans would be coming to visit a clinic maybe 5 or 6 times a year. Majority of the time, they're taking care of their own conditions. To empower and to give them all the tools that are necessary so that they can successfully manage these conditions, My Healthy Vet is godsend.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
My Health eVet, VA's personal health record, helps veteran patients actively participate in their health and well-being. If you're a VA patient, consider upgrading your account today at myhealth.va.gov. With an upgraded account, veterans can securely access personal health records online 24/7. An upgraded account offers secure messaging, which strengthens the partnership between veterans and your healthcare team. To learn more, visit myhealth.va.gov. That's myhealth.va.gov. Take control of your VA healthcare.
Life's big decisions require some research. You get comparison reports before you buy a car. You hire an inspector when buying a house. You might even look up someone online before a date. But when you go to pick your primary care physician, sometimes you only get a name and number. That hardly seems fair. After all, the only person who has more influence on your health is you. It's different at Kaiser Permanente. All our doctors are listed online with information that paints a picture of who they are, so you know you're picking a doctor who is right for you, right for your family, and someone you can email. Oh, here's one for Dr. Amy Benoulis, who went to Northwestern. Dr. Lindsay Strickland is interested in chronic disease management and is accepting new patients. Bingo! Become a member, and no matter whom you choose, you get a true advocate for your health. So log on to kp.org/doctor and check us out. It could be the beginning of a healthy relationship. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
It is not every day you have access to the chief financial officer, but on July 19th, you'll have the opportunity to meet these key decision makers face to face. Come meet the top CFOs of our region at the Washington Business Journal's CFO of the Year Awards. Join us Thursday, July 19th at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington for a spectacular lunch and invaluable networking. Go to washingtonbusinessjournal.com/event to reserve your spot.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Sean Riley and Steve Losey from the Federal Times. We're trying to cover the waterfront here. Okay, I wanted to ask you guys about these. The Senior Executive Association is up in arms because of this Stock Act, STOCK Act, and this is the one that Congress passed. I believe the President signed it in April, and I know you've covered it. and the executives don't like it because they're included in some of the financial disclosure requirements, and the argument, I guess, is that it opens or makes them better targets for threats. I'm sorry. Something died here. I think we're back. Did we lose him? Okay. Well, let me add Lib here while we're going on. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay, sorry, we lost you. I had some sound problems. Did you hear the question?
Yeah.
Lengthy question. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's the SEA, Senior Executive Association's position is, and they just put out a quote-unquote position paper yesterday, is that, you know, this essentially is a solution in search of a problem. You know, these are what are called Form 278s, their annual financial disclosure requirements that career SES employees have to file each year, as well as actually generals, admirals, political appointees, about 28,000 people in all, and that these forms have are already public, but they have only been usually, at least in my experience, available only in paper form. You have to make a written request. And I have to say agencies don't always make it easy to find out even who's required to file. But what happened in the Stock Act was very quietly in the House bill, and I've never found out exactly who was responsible for this, they put in a requirement that agencies and eventually the Office of Government Ethics have to post all of these 28,000 forms on the Internet. And the deadline, at least for agencies to get these forms up for their employees, is August 31st. OGE was hoping to put out some guidance on how they're supposed to do this by the end of April. It hasn't happened yet, as far as I know, and I'm not sure when it will. And as you indicated, SEA's position is that, you know, this will make at least its membership, more vulnerable to identity theft for Foreign Service officers serving overseas. It could expose them, their information could be accessed by criminal syndicates, even potential terrorists. It'll also make spousal information available, since you have to report that typically, I think, if it's held, held in a joint account. So they have a lot of concerns about this, but, the chances and what they'd like to do, according to the position paper, is delay implementation to actually have a real look at whether this is needed, because there were no hearings at all held on the Stock Act when it was going through, let alone this particular provision. But so far there doesn't seem much indication that Congress is interested in revisiting this issue. Talked to someone with SEA yesterday, said they get a lot of sympathy and understanding, but Congress is they work through next month and then they're off all of August, so it would seem the chances of any legislative action are pretty slim.
Well, what's the salary cutoff? I mean, above what level would people have to file these forms?
That's a good question. I'm not sure there's an exact cutoff. I think it's more classes of particular employees. As I said, senior executive service members, general and flag officers, presidential appointees requiring Senate confirmation. Those are the ones that have to file the public disclosure forms. And then there are several hundred thousand others that have to file confidential financial disclosures, and those are typically at lower levels. But I'm not exactly sure. I don't know if there's
I believe there's a formula, and I looked at it, and I was hoping you guys would be able to dope it out, because it's something like 10% above a certain category, but okay. We can catch up with that later on. Well, are members of Congress, are any of them concerned that their information is going to be posted?
Mean members of Congress?
Yes.
Well, there's, I think, I believe that they've already, not that I know of, if they have, my guess is privately they probably are, but that there are very few who would be willing to go on the record just because
sure.
They don't want to look like they're trying to cover something up.
Well, this may be a case of misery likes company, too.
I think so. I think they decided that was good for the legislative branch, was good for the executive branch.
Yeah, okay, very good. What else are you working on?
There was one story that I'm kind of keeping an eye on. There's a temporary seasonal firefighter for the U.S. Forest Service. His name is John Lauer. He's right now in Colorado trying to fight that wildfire that's broken out there. And he's started a petition for health benefits, and he's trying to raise attention to the fact that several thousand firefighters in the federal government, because they work for 6 months or less than for the government each year, they are ineligible for FEHBP, and he's trying to get the Office of Personnel Management to change that rule and allow at least seasonal firefighters to gain health benefits. He says that he was motivated to take this step after His godson, who is the son of a friend and fellow firefighter, was born prematurely, and his friend's family was socked with $70,000 in treatments for the premature boy, and didn't have health insurance to cover it. So the National Federation of Federal Employees has picked up on this and is pushing it, and last week it shot up, gained more than 100,000 signatures. They're now shooting for 150,000 signatures. So they're going to keep the pressure on the Office of Personnel Management on this issue. Well,
I can see why that would happen. These are some of the bravest people in the world, and the government needs them, but only 6 months a year. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Sean. Thank you, Steve. We'll see you all here next Wednesday. Have a good week.